Welcome, everybody, to Aaron's High Cap Radio Program. Today is November 25th, 2017, and we're going to be live here for the next 2 hours. I can't tell you how much I missed getting behind this microphone. Last week, you guys did an awesome job. I got Ross to my left. I got Trey to my front. You guys did an excellent job. Thank you very much for covering my rear end. Ross, I've got twice the fan mail now, so you're going to have to pay twice the bill when it comes to my back chiropractor bills, okay? We're hauling in all your fan mail. Ladies and gentlemen, we got a great show going on, but before I start my day, if you look in the screen, you'll see it later on in the week. I always start my day with my fresh cup of Joe, Morning Joe from CEFCO. Here at Hilltop and Cameron, they've got a special going on. Again, you've got a breakfast sandwich with a medium coffee for $3. That's great. So go in and grab your coffee, your breakfast sandwich, get a newspaper, pack of smokes, whatever it is that starts your day. Go there at Hilltop, CEFCO, and Cameron. We thank them a lot. Say hi to the girls and tell them I sent you over there. Let me tell you what's going on in today's show. First of all, if you want to be part of the show, the number here in the studio is 254-697-6633. Give me an email at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com. Go to the website, aaronsgunshop.com. Check out the Facebook page. Like us on Facebook and subscribe to our YouTube channel at Aaron's Gunshop. The YouTube channel there, you're going to have a lot of videos and learn a lot of stuff. We've got today three more true stories of self-defense from the American Rifleman's Armed Citizens column. Let us all learn what to do and what not to do from the experience of others. In my License to Carry attorney segment with attorney extraordinaire Benton Ross Watson and myself, we'll talk about how to handle a traffic stop with and without a license to carry. Also, vehicle searches and what to declare and what is not necessary to declare, and so much more when it comes to that topic. My topic of interest segment will go over upcoming events with Aaron, so you all need to get out your calendars and write this stuff down. Tactical snacking with Janae Goodman. We'll be talking turkey, Thanksgiving leftover recipes and ideas, and I'm sure you'll want to gobble this all up. I know. Don't quit your day job. Corny? That's kind of like mashed in there. Okay. At 11 o'clock.
I can't keep up.
At 11 o'clock, the voice of law enforcement, retired police chief Randy Dixon, the man of manners, the communicator of common sense, the epitome of encyclopedia and all-around good guy, Randy Dixon, the voice of law enforcement. And towards the end of the show, Master Cindy Key, owner of Central Texas Martial Arts Academy in Rockdale, will give us words of wisdom and tactics on how to defend ourselves and so much more. So strap yourselves in, crank up the volume, get ready to take notes, and let's get this show rolling here. And I'm going to start it off with true stories from the American Rifleman's Armed Citizens column. It is December issue 2017, page 10, and here's the first story that I'm selecting. When an assailant tried to take advantage of a 15-year-old Ohio girl with a brain tumor, the girl's mother was having none of that. The stranger gained entry to the home where two teens and the woman live. After hearing the 17-year-old daughter scream, pay attention to this part. After hearing the 17-year-old daughter scream, the mother immediately grabbed her gun and went to help because the home had been broken into a few days earlier. She went to the part of the house where her daughter was and saw the intruder moving in on the sick teen, whose brain tumor has diminished the girl's peripheral vision and slowed her reaction to dangerous situations. Though the mom didn't shoot the attacker, she took aim and warned him that he chose the wrong mother to intimidate, scaring him off. Police arrested the suspect shortly thereafter. Now, my expert commentary. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a good story to illustrate what I teach in my seminars. Although it's a generality and not an ironclad rule, this is good stuff here. When an intruder is in your home, there is two ways to go about it. First way is you don't know where the intruder is, so you must use all your skills to search the house without yourself being detected. The other way is when you hear screams of danger, you know then exactly where the threat is. Pick up your weapon and go. So if I would describe it like this, you got the letter Y, and you got the base of the Y. It goes straight up and down, and then it forks off to the left and to the right. Let's just say the left fork is you don't know where the intruder is, so you have to use your tactics and skills and indicators to try and find out where the threat is without giving your position away.
Which was when you, I mentioned last week, you took me out to your place, and we went through the, right. the house, the shoot house, the constructed house that you have out there, and you were trying to show me all the different obstacles that a person can face when they're trying to find somebody in a house. So that was really cool.
You
the angles.
To me. You actually listened to me. All right. Good deal.
So maybe tell them, too, about the angles. You want to step back, instead of being right next to the wall.
That's a whole different ball game, a whole different segment. But when you got, let's go to the other side of the Y first, because what you were doing right there, you were talking about turning corners and making sure you're not getting noticed. But the other side of the Y is, why would you waste your time doing all that if you know that your child's in bedroom number one and the screams are coming from bedroom number one? I'm running to that bedroom. I'm not worried about turning corners. So there's a difference there. And the reason I picked this story was for that.
Yeah,
She heard the girl screaming. She knew right where it was, picked up the weapon, and went directly to the threat. Okay, so that's why I like that particular story. Let's go to story number two. Police said a Washington State homeowner with a concealed gun permit, concealed carry permit, followed best practices to the letter after he stumbled upon a criminal who was on the lam. The armed citizen who told police he has been actively training for defense use of a handgun for more than a decade said his lessons paid off in terms of having the restraint not to fire. The fleeing suspect, with four outstanding warrants against him, was armed with a baton-like object when the resident saw him several feet from his child's bedroom. The law-abiding gun owner drew his gun from the holster, assumed a solid stance, and held the suspect at gunpoint until the police arrived. Again, my excellent commentary. Ladies and gentlemen, this is an excellent story to show the needs of training. Training gives you more time. More time gives you more options. And one of those options is not having to use your firearm. With a lack of training, you can panic, and panic causes bad decisions to be made. That is what we don't want. Train your mind, your body, and with your equipment to be prepared for those 4 minutes that can end with life or death. Now, Ross, you're going to love this one. Story number three. Goats and other livestock in southwestern South Dakota have one less predator to worry about than a teen in the region has shot and killed a mountain lion that was attacking farm animals. The wild feline was responsible for killing a goat, a duck, and a cat at one ranch. The goat farmer reported the deaths to the state game department, but her son shot the 70-pound
rancher,
cat.
Rancher, not farmer.
Shot the 70-pound cat when it came around again before state officials had time to investigate. Now, Ross, like I said, this one's for you. Ladies and gentlemen, this one is for Ross. I know he hates goats. The goat farmer took to action to save his goats so Ross could have something to hate. Great job, goat farmer. I remember that story you told. You hate goats. All right, so that was from the most current issue of the American Rifleman. And now, of course, I've got an opinion, right? I always have an opinion. And this week's opinion piece is titled, Are You or Have You Ever Been One of Those? Ladies and gentlemen, you know what I mean when I say that. You know, the one that thinks they know it all in general or on a specific topic. Either way, it can be really annoying. Let me give you some examples. An instructor or a teacher who thinks there is no other way than their way. Ladies and gentlemen, I can tell you right now that when it comes to being an instructor or teacher, there are many ways to get the job of teaching done. Now, granted, on some curriculum, there is only one way to get the right answer. But in others, there is a multitude of ways to teach the student. Now, let's talk about the student. Right there near the top of my irritation chart is the know-it-all student. This type of person is the one that the rest of the class would like to code red. You know, put a bar of soap in a sock and beat the irritating student clean of his problems. If you're a student receiving some type of instruction from an instructor or a teacher, this is what you should do. Be quiet. The teacher or instructor doesn't care how you did it up north in Iowa or wherever you're from. You're in his teacher's, you're in this teacher's class now, so be quiet. Sit up, listen, and take notes. Questions from a student are always welcome. Their instruction is not. Now, last Saturday I trained along with my other instructors, a group of men from a church located here in Milam County. Each one had their own experiences with dealing with a gun. And you know what they did? They sat there, attentive, taking notes, asking great questions, and watched alternative methods of how to protect themselves. They sat there as open notebooks with empty pages waiting to receive an alternative method as to how to protect themselves, loved ones, and property. By doing that, they took what they learned, or portions of it, applied it with other things that they may have learned from other instructors, and came up with a plan that would best suit them. Had they come in closed-minded and not willing to receive the information I was giving them, they would have wasted theirs and my time. I, personally, am a very inquisitive person. When I am a student, I like to ask questions so I thoroughly understand the perspective of what the teacher is trying to teach me. When a teacher is teaching me something contrary to what I already know, I have to remind myself, hey, you can always learn something new. So shut up, Matt, and listen. Try their way. See if any of it can apply to your way of living. So I am. Are you one of those? If the truth be told, I think most of us have been at one time or another, and sometimes to this day even do it. And you know what? Welcome to the human race, because we all do it. We are all one of those from time to time. But being human also means we can learn. So let's all work on not knowing too much when it comes time to being instructed by another who has proven themselves to be experts in their fields. All right, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to have attorney extraordinaire Benton Ross Watson. We're going to be talking searches and all that kind of good stuff. This segment of Aaron's High Confidential Radio Program is being brought to you by Twin Pistol Bail Bonds, LLC. Have you been arrested? Are you in jail and want to get out? Call Twin Pistol Bail Bonds at 254-697-6035. Twin Pistol Bail Bonds accepts credit cards and debit cards. Call-ins are also accepted. Conduct your business privately in the Twin Pistol Bail Bonds offices, which are located directly across from the Milam County Sheriff's Office at 707 West 4th Street in Cameron. You're in jail and you want to get out. Let Twin Pistol Bail Bonds help. Call Twin Pistol Bail Bonds now at 254-697-6035 and ask for Dustin Thomas or Lisa Roden. Twin Pistol Bail Bonds, 254-697-6035. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who's been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Butros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. aaronsgunshop.com.
Coons, the owner of AMC Firearms in Heidenhammer, Texas, is an avid gun enthusiast and enjoys helping all of his customers to find the gun that's perfect for them. With a large selection of pistols, rifles, and shotguns, finding the right gun becomes easy. Go to AMC Firearms, located at 5819 U.S. Highway 190 in Heidenhammer, or call them 254-983-4417. Pistols, rifles, shotguns, ammo, knives, and a whole lot more. AMC Firearms, 254-983-4417.
Capolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm focuses on cases involving asbestos exposure, mesothelioma, birth trauma, defective products, and injury and death resulting from car and truck wrecks. Call the tough, experienced injury attorneys at Capolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron. Call 888-MESO-FIRM or 254-697-4965.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. Again, it's November 25th, 2017. The number here to the studio. Oh, first of all, we're simulcasting KMIL 105.1 FM here in Cameron, and also in Rockdale at 98.5 KRXT. So we're expanding there. We're hoping we can get bigger and bigger, but it cannot happen without your support. We need sponsors, and we need the people listening to support those sponsors, because it's a circle of life. You support them, they support me, we stay on the air, and everybody's happy. Okay, with me to my left here is attorney extraordinaire Benton Ross Watson. Ross, you did an awesome job last week. How'd you like doing a show for the first time on your own?
Oh, man, dirty deeds done dirt cheap.
Okay, very good. Well, you look good. I was reviewing the show, and, man, you did really well. So this week, we got some interesting topics here. We've got what to do, how to handle a traffic stop with and without a license to carry. There's a chapter in my teaching manual that basically says you do it one way if you got a license and one way if you don't have the license on you. But the third way is if you don't have a license at all. So why don't you open up with what you... I see all those notes there. Why don't you just start it off and tell us what you're thinking about that particular
thing? Well, I don't know exactly what the LTC manual says, but I'll just say, first off...
Well, let me set it up then.
The code's going to require you to display your license to carry.
Not exactly. Let me clarify.
If they ask for identification, right?
But here's where the problem is. It says if you got the license on you and an officer or magistrate asks for any form of ID, you must show your license and your driver's license and your license to carry if you have the gun on
you. Or identification certificate issued by the department.
But here's the key. If you have the gun on you. If you don't have the gun on you, the law doesn't require you to do that. However, the officer's going to find out you got it when he calls in dispatch.
And we're going to talk about that.
And they're going to get upset. So now that the public knows what we're talking about, go ahead.
Okay, so just a general rundown of Fourth Amendment search and seizure law. Okay, you're going to have a consensual encounter, right? Which means that any police officer can come up to you on the street just like any other normal person. If I see you walking on the street and I want to come up and talk to you, I'm not a police officer, I want to come and talk to you, say, hey, man, you got marijuana in your pocket? You can tell me to go jump in the lake if you want to, or you can sit there and tell me about it.
Uh-huh.
Okay? And not to say that you would, but just you look like a culprit, you know, a perpetrator. So you're a good example. Anyway, so if I would ask, you know, a police officer got the same right to do that. And so when we're talking about a traffic stop situation, they got to have reasonable suspicion to stop your vehicle. And reasonable suspicion doesn't mean that they actually have to know that you committed a crime. Okay? It could be maybe there's an obscure light on one of the tail lights that may or may not be show a crack. Okay? If the police officer thinks maybe that there is a crack, he might be able to stop you because he reasonably suspected that crime was afoot. Not necessarily that you actually committed a crime, but that maybe that happened, or maybe there's something wrong with your license plate, you know, frame. Maybe it's a little bit off and he wants to double check. Maybe it looks like the light's flickering. Whatever. It's not for sure there's a crime, but there's something there, suspicious circumstances connected to crime. So if he stops you in this point, okay, this becomes a traffic stop. And any kind of traffic stop, a police officer is going to be allowed to ask you for your identification, check your registration, and ask for insurance. And so if you're carrying a weapon in your car at this time, okay, technically the government code section is going to say that, yes, when they ask for identification, if you're carrying that weapon, you're going to have to display your ID or your driver's license, right, as well as a license to carry a handgun.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing. In 2009, the legislature removed the teeth from this law. So it used to be a Class B misdemeanor not to do this. As it stands, there is no technical violation of this law. So if you do not show your license to carry, there it's not classified as any kind of offense, and it's not an offense technically under that provision. However, it's not that simple. Okay, so under Texas Penal Code 46.02, okay, we're talking about unlawful carrying of weapons. It was further confounded by the legislature's, you know, passing of the new open carry laws, because then they added some non-applicability sections in a few subsections below in 46.15. So let's put it like this. It's unlawful to carry a weapon, a handgun, unless you have a license to carry, correct?
In 99.9% of the time, yes.
Right, unless you're on your own premises, right, yes. Or you're traveling, right. something to that effect, okay?
Okay.
In your own car.
Okay, yes.
Okay, or traveling to or from your own car.
There
okay?
you go.
And then, so, but otherwise, it's going to be a crime, okay, to be carrying a firearm unless you have an LTC.
Okay, so
we're talking handguns. Here's
handguns. So let's say you're walking down the street, and the police officer wants to stop you. Well, technically, the way that they've got this worded is they don't have any exceptions in there for the license to carry holder. It just says, right, if a person's licensed to carry. But then 4615B6 says, right, 46-02 does not apply to a person who is carrying, a license issued, under the government code section, chapter 411, okay, and a handgun in a concealed or, you know, open in a holster.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if that means you've got to be carrying it, right, for that section not to apply, one gets several vague interpretations. And I think for purposes of here today, I think a very reasonable interpretation would be that the police officer is entitled to assume that you are unlawfully carrying a weapon unless you are also, if you're in a handgun, meaning a handgun in this situation. A police officer is allowed to assume that you are unlawfully carrying a handgun unless you have that license on you. If you're walking somewhere that's not on your own premises or to or from your vehicle. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay, and so I think that a police officer at least is going to get out of any civil liability for arresting you, okay, if you do not, or if you're not carrying your license to carry, okay, and so that's all the more reason why you should just show the police officer the license, okay? The second, the other interpretation of this is under 46-02A-1, that's the motor vehicle provision. When you're in your motor vehicle, okay, then you're allowed to have a weapon without a, you know, without a license. But if it's out in the open,
right?
Okay, you're going to be in trouble.
Correct.
Okay, so this section says, though, if a person commits an offense, if the person intentionally, knowingly, recklessly carries on about his person a handgun in a motor vehicle that is owned by the person or under person control at any time in which the handgun is in plain view, unless the person is licensed to carry a handgun under the government code, and it is carried in a shoulder or belt holster. Mm-hmm. Okay. So this one actually references the law directly and doesn't say anything about, you know, the person being licensed to carry. And so, I mean, and actually says directly, mentions about the person, as opposed to 46-02A, which doesn't mention the license to carry. In other words, one directly mentions your license. A-1 directly mentions the license, whereas A does not.
Mm-hmm.
And so it seems like the non-applicability portion that we talked about that said you must be carrying the license, it seems redundant and superfluous, like it doesn't apply. And so I don't know what would happen in this situation, but that's the whole point of why I'm telling you this. And if you're confused, you should be. Okay? Bottom line is, a police officer may well be within his every right to arrest you, all right, if you're not carrying the license on you because of the way that the code is worded, okay, such that if you're carrying and he asks you and you don't have the license on you, he would probably be well within his right to arrest you, right, for unlawful carry. Now, I don't believe that you're guilty of that necessarily, but...
Are you talking right now as if you're not in your vehicle?
Both.
Because in the vehicle, you have the ability to have it there as long as it's concealed.
Exactly, but that's what I'm saying, if it's in plain view. If you're violating that section in plain view, unless it's in a holster and you're licensed to carry.
That I get. Okay, I thought you were talking specifically.
And I'm saying that one's even more ambiguous and even more vague than the first one, whereas if you're walking down in just a public street or something like that, you're walking out and you have your handgun open carry. If it's concealed, nobody's
probably going to know. Okay, if you could generalize this in a safe generalized term or explanation as to what to do, what would you give as a...
I don't think that if you don't have your license and you refuse to show your license that you technically violated the government code section that requires you to show your license upon request of identification. But if you don't have your license and you don't show it to a police officer, right, you're going to run the risk of giving that police officer the authority to arrest you for unlawful carry. Does that make sense?
Honestly, I'm a little confused.
Yeah, and you should be.
I'm a little confused on the way you're explaining, because I know you're getting so detailed, and I totally dig it, but it becomes confusing.
Right, so I'm telling you, if you're carrying your firearm on your handgun,
mm-hmm.
Okay, I keep saying firearm, so we're talking about handguns here, naturally.
Strictly handguns, yeah.
Okay, If you're carrying your handgun on you, you better have your license.
Yes.
And you better show the police officer. That's it.
Okay. That's the you better show your police officer is a general rule, because there's a technical thing in the rules that says if you don't have the gun on you, you don't have to show it.
Right. And unless the police officer, and we'll get into this, you'll stop. Okay. Unless the police officer suspects you of a dangerous crime or something, or you're reckless driving, if it's a traffic stop, right? Most police officers, I think, if you have an LTC, they're probably going to feel a little more comfortable. Right, unless you're being combative, unless you're arguing with them. If you're comfortable, not nervous, and it's a speeding deal, and you and they ask you, right, and you say, "Hey, man, I got a gun right here in my console, and I'm an LTC guy," they're probably not going to act any different than in any other case.
Look, okay? An officer, 90% of the time,
but that's a good question.
Doing his job, and when he does his job, the person he's doing the job to, there needs to be that mutual respect. We talk about this all the time. If the officer requests the information, just get it done and be on your way. Now, there's other people, and I know this is a fact, there are some officers whose badge makes their head 10 times bigger than it is, and they just get this power trip. And those are the ones that irritate you and you say, screw you, okay? But in general, if you're pulled over by an officer, you know, hey, there's a reason. He's pulling you over for some reason. Just go through the motions and do what you got to do and be on your way, okay?
That's what I said. At one show we had, I said, at some point, you know, gosh, after your rights have been violated and the officer just doesn't get over the stop, at some point, yeah, okay, say screw you or whatever you want to say, but generally speaking, that doesn't help you.
No, it doesn't help you
okay,
at all.
It's going to hurt the situation, and you're not going to do yourself any favors. And plus, if something does happen, right, the jury's going to love you, okay, if you're respectful and you're mm-hmm. following and you're cooperative and you're doing everything, and then the police officer still goes off and does something that is an abuse of authority, the jury's just going to fall in love with you. But even if the cop is wrong, if you start going off and mouthing back at the police officer, you're going to ruin your chances to get damages.
All right, here's what we're going to do. I am going to say what I think you just said in as brief a form, because I'm a simple guy. I'm a 50-cent kind of guy, okay? You're a dollar guy. You're educated, and I'm not. So I'm going to say it in 50-cent terms. You stop me when I go off track. If you're walking down the street and you've got a weapon on you, whether it's open or concealed, and an officer for some reason decides to stop you or for identification, you must show him your driver's license, identification, and your license to carry. Okay. If you're in a vehicle and an officer pulls you over and the weapon is either in a holster, shoulder, or a belt holster, open or concealed carry, and you have a license to carry, you must show both your driver's license and your license to carry. Okay. That's it. Outside those parameters, officer has the legal right to arrest you if he wishes to do so.
And plus, if the officer nowadays in most of the computer systems, I think even Milam County, right, they're going to see that you have a license to carry. And so if you go up and you don't even mention license to carry,
that's right,
that's going to make them a little nervous.
That's why I tell my students, I don't care if you don't have the gun on you and the statute says you don't have to show him your license. He's going to find out and he's going to get pissed. Whether you got the gun on you or not, show him your driver's license and your license to carry.
Yeah, and say, hey, I'm a license to carry holder, but I'm not carrying my weapon today.
Yeah.
Okay. Even if you're not carrying it. I would say that because they're going to see it and they're going to be wondering probably in the back of their head, you know, what's going on.
All right, let's go a little further now since times are ticking here. I want to talk about the
I want to say this. I'm sorry. Let's say that you want to fight a battle that's not a good battle to fight. And this is, maybe it is. Maybe the police being a prick and you want to stand your ground and stand your rights. They didn't have a right to stop you. And that's completely understandable. Delaware versus Prowse said, you know, a police officer can't stop you just to check your license. Okay, and so they need to have some kind of reasonable suspicion. But again, if they know you're carrying open, right, they're going to assume that you're unlawfully carrying unless you're carrying your license.
License, right.
And that's what I'm not saying that's right, but that's what the law is going to stand. You're going to risk getting arrested. And if you do that, if you get arrested, your LTC is probably going to be suspended.
Suspended, that's right. Snowball effect. So, just goes downhill.
Yeah, and you're going to see Lisa Roden down at Twin Pistols Bail Bond. You're going to have to get bailed out. Probably going to have to hire a lawyer just to talk to somebody. I'm sorry. Go ahead with what you were saying.
I just wanted to move on to the next phase of it. What if the officer feels it's necessary to search a vehicle? Give us some parameters on how they're allowed to. What's some terminology? Can you just say no? Because here's what I would do. If an officer decides he wants to search my vehicle and he makes it anything other than a demand, I'm going to say respectfully, officer, thanks, but no thanks. I'm not going to do it. Now, if he demands me, I'm not going to argue the officer because there's something going on, okay? But if I'm being commanded to get out of the vehicle because he's going to search my vehicle, I'm going to say, whatever, I'm going to get out because I know that ain't the place to fight it. But if I have the option, I'm going to say no. I don't want you to. There's nothing in this vehicle for you to search.
Well, go ahead. If there's nothing in the vehicle, let them search. But there's something in the vehicle, tell them no. Okay, no, I'm just playing. I generally always tell them no. And I've been asked maybe three times in my life. Okay, and the first reason is I'll call his name out, Chris Stringer. Okay, when I was in high school, searched my vehicle. I think it was on July 4th. He just knew he was going to get me on something. We didn't have anything in the truck at all. And I said, yeah, go ahead, search it. Okay, I was there for 2.5 hours. Okay, well, I don't say yes anymore. Okay, I love Chris. You're a good guy. He's a great guy, right? We're friends now and everything, and he's a good police officer. But he's the reason, okay, that I say no every time. And every time I've said no, they say, oh, okay. And they've just gone about their way. And a lot of police officers are good at sniffing stuff out. And a lot of times they know, well, I don't really have anything. And they'll ask you, I can't tell you how many guys I've had, and I've just been like, why did you tell them they could search? They had nothing. Mm-hmm. And the police officer asked him, and there's nothing wrong. It's good police work. Good
police exactly. Right? Police officer's doing his job. He's checking it out. And if you go for it, you went for it.
Yeah, know? And he said, yeah. And they go in and search, and there's a doobie sitting right there in the cup holder. I'm like, man, what is wrong with you? And so, but the problem is we don't know how many times that I wish I could accurately tell clients, you know, say yes, and, you know, then they're not going to be suspicious. Well, police officers are going to do their job, period.
Well, what is the terminology that an officer has to say that you don't have a choice? I mean, because sometimes, would you mind if I checked your vehicle? That's a clear option that says, yes, you can, or no, I'm sorry, you can't, as compared to, get out of the car, I'm searching your car.
And it's hard to tell, too, because if they have probable cause, right, let's say they smell marijuana.
Do you want to say it? Okay, we're good.
Let's assume they smell marijuana or something like that. A good police officer is still going to ask you for consent, right? Because then he doesn't have to prove there's no credibility issues. There's nothing like that. The police officer, if he gets consent, Fourth Amendment's out the window. Done, right? Unless there's some kind of pretextual problem with the stop to begin with. So a good police officer is always going to ask you for consent, right? Even if they got probable cause, so you never know. Right. When they ask you for consent, either they ain't got anything and they need that extra, you know, exemption from the Fourth Amendment to get in, or they already got probable cause and they're just trying to make their case stronger.
Right.
Okay. And so that's what I'm saying. I don't think, you know, yes, if you deny them the right to search, there can probably be some suspicion, very little, though. Right. For them to go on, you know, it can be extra suspicion. Right under the Fourth Amendment to allow them a reason to develop reasonable suspicion or probable cause. But of course don't like that. They don't like using a denial of a right to of a request to search, right, as a factor in the probable cause and reasonable suspicion analysis. So if you don't want them to search, tell them no. Just be respectful about it. Say, officer, I'm a real constitutionalist. Right.
Oh gosh, don't say that.
Yeah, whatever you want to say.
I've seen videos on that one, man. Gosh, they just go irate when you say that kind of stuff.
In most cases, an experienced police officer is going to know whether he has the right to get in that vehicle or not. And when he asks you permission, he already knows whether he needs to get into it or not. And if you've got nothing to hide, I'm along with him. Just let him search it. But if you got something, say no. And make them go one step further if they have to. I have a question while we're talking about this, if I could. All right, you've got a gun in your car. You don't have a license to carry, but you legally have it in your car.
Thank you.
Now, a police officer stops you and says, is there anything in my car that could harm me? What do you say? What would you suggest?
Let me clarify something, though. Your vehicle is almost like your house. There's a little bit of difference, okay?
Well, neither is a lie. If you say no, the gun's not going to harm you because I'm not going to shoot you with it. There's nobody else in the vehicle. So I don't see anything wrong with saying no. There's nothing in the car that's going to harm you.
Yeah, but if an officer came to my front door and goes to me and says, is there anything harmful in your house? I go, well, it's none of your business. It's my house. If I'm a law-abiding citizen and you pull me over in my car, is there anything in, and I don't have a license, okay? If I don't have a license, I'm going to go, I'm good, man. You're not coming to my car. Thank you very much. I respect you, but no, you're not coming in here. There's no reason for me to answer that question. It's my house.
And you got every right to say that. From a police standpoint, I don't think even you could sit here and say that answer to that question is automatically going to raise suspicion. It's probably fact intensive. Probably is going to depend on the circumstances.
Totality of the circumstances.
Right. Exactly. And so if it's just a standard traffic stop and that's a routine question or something, or something that police officers happen to ask that day, yes or no may not make a difference in the world. But if it's at 3 in the morning, a mile from a bar, right, Saturday night, you know, this is, you're getting into circumstances where the police officer may be a little more concerned about, you know, whether or not you have something dangerous in the car or not.
One of the most confusing things that I've always had asked me is, okay, I've got my car, I've got a gun in there, I've got a handgun in there. Do I have to tell the police officer I've got the handgun in there? According to the law, you don't technically have to do that. Because that falls under the old-fashioned traveler statute that is no longer. So, but a lot of people think that you got to tell them right off the bat, I've got a gun in my car, and they're not doing anything wrong. Maybe they ran a stop sign. That's all they did. No other circumstances, no exigent circumstances at all. And technically, they don't have to tell you they've got a gun in there, I don't believe.
Right. If it's not in plain view, they haven't violated any law. But even if it is in plain view, they don't have to incriminate themselves.
Right.
And so they don't have to say, yes, there is a weapon in here that's I'm unlawfully carrying. Arrest me, officer. You know, I mean, it would be I wouldn't advise you to do that, but as far as what the police officer perceives, you know, that's probably going to be very circumstance-based, based on just the stop in general.
Technically, they haven't violated the law if that gun's in there out of sight, correct?
That's correct, but like, what is that? We've talked about before, what is out of sight? I've had guys arrested for unlawful carry when it's tucked underneath the seat, because is that in plain view? You know, if at what point is it plain view? Right. There's always some ambiguities, right, as far as what is and what is not in plain view. But, yes, if it's in the console or something like that, I feel like that's not in plain view.
Exactly.
And so, yeah, I don't think they have to tell you. No. But I mean,
it boils down to the common sense of who the officer is. They need the training. I don't care what officer is. They need the training to understand this law. Because if they go one step further and they just dig a gun out that's not in plain sight, you know, that's a supervisory issue there.
Chief, when you were on the street, would you stop people with the thought processes of you're guilty until I think you're not guilty? Or do you go to the individual and say, this is just another Joe, I'm doing my job, and if I find something, I'll take it from there? Or do you have that attitude as an officer to go?
It probably depends. Huh?
Yeah, it depends on the situation.
I'll give you credit for that. I
mean, it depends on the time, space, location.
In
most cases, I was a little bit different. I always gave people the benefit of the doubt. You know, there's black and white, and there's gray. And I always gave people the gray because I always tried to err on the side of the citizen. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's times when the hair on the back of your neck stood up and you knew there was something wrong, and then you go one step further.
Well, I can understand. Yeah, I totally get that. But I'm talking as a generality, just it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon, it's a basic traffic stop, you're on the highway, boom.
I was cautious, but I never was overcautious. That makes sense. Because I'm telling you, if you people don't like to hear this, but if it's your time as a police officer, it's your time as a police officer.
Wow. It's your time. When the net comes and you're the fish, and the net picks you up, it's your time. You never know what's going to happen. All right, look, we got a few minutes left. Ladies and gentlemen, the number here is 254-697-6633. Somebody give me a call real quick. Tell me a story that you've been pulled over, if it went great or if it went bad. I want to hear it real fast. Give me a call, 254-697-6633. Go. Start dialing now.
Well, I want to say this is pretty there's been a Sixth Circuit case say that a police officer doesn't have a right just to stop you the name of it was Northrop versus City of Toledo Police Department. Is the Sixth Circuit. It was a 3-judge panel, though, which means it wasn't a full court deciding it. Right, it was only a 3 judges out of that court, and it was out of the Sixth Circuit, so it's not binding on Texas, and it's not a United States Supreme Court case. But there was a man walking a dog. He had a pistol in his hip holster, so it was open carry. Okay, and there was a call from a concerned citizen, kind of like C.J. Grisham case, but this was a handgun. That court ruled that it was unlawful under the Fourth Amendment for the police officer to go and request identification and a license to carry. And that it violated his Fourth Amendment rights because it was the same as Prowse. It's unlawful to drive without a license. It's unlawful to drive a car without a license. So you're saying here it's unlawful to carry a handgun without a license. And if it's unlawful just to stop people to check their license for the vehicle, then it's also unlawful to stop and check their license,
right, for carrying a handgun.
Makes sense to me.
But the thing is I read a statistic, I think it was from 2016, that 97% of people don't have a license to carry, okay, whereas, you know, almost everybody has a license to drive that's of age. And so police officers can make a good argument, the state's going to be able to make a good argument, that there's a 97% chance, okay, that a person that's walking with a handgun in a holster that's open carry, right, is a 97% chance that person is not licensed to carry. And so I can see the counter. We'll just have to wait and see. Stay tuned for result of all that argument.
You got a guy with his family, and he's open carrying, and he's in the city park on the bench having a picnic with the family. And then you got another guy wearing his hat sideways, pants down his rear end, and he's packing heat on the side. I mean, I can see where you might check one as compared to the other, but that's why I'm just saying, an officer, I would have a problem with an officer just going to people because of what you just said. The probability might be higher that they don't have a license and they're carrying the gun illegal. You just can't do it, you know?
And there's a big push. It's a big deal in the legislature. And they even passed amendments trying to make it unlawful for police. But
Ross, tell everybody how they get a hold of you.
105 East Main Street in Cameron, Texas, right across the street from the courthouse. Big milk cow on the side of the building. You can't miss it. Phone number is 254-605-4140. You can email me at benton@watson.legal, benton@watson.legal. It's always a pleasure. And also, you can find Rick Dodd. He knows where to find me.
And ladies and gentlemen, I just want to say this whole segment is sponsored by Capilino Dodd Krebs Law Firm. So we want to thank them very much for doing that. So we'll see you on the other side.
Capilino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron prides themselves on service, resourcefulness, knowledge of the law, and attention to detail. So if you or a loved one has been injured by someone else's negligence, they can help. Call 888-637-6347 for help today from Capilino Dodd Krebs Law Firm. Capilino Dodd Krebs Law Firm will work as hard for your family as you do. Call 800-460-0606 for Capilino Dodd Krebs.
Power. Sometimes you just need more. But what do you do when that yard equipment needs more or just isn't working like it used to? The answer is Cameron's Fall Engine, formerly Cameron Seed Company, where friendly service and quantity work stop at 408 West Bath. They provide all your outdoor power equipment needs. Check out their selection of Echo, Snapper, and Zero Turn Big Dog mowers. Power through the summer with Cameron's Fall Engine. Call 254-697-3452 or stop in at 408 West Bath.
Arch Coons, the owner of ANC Firearms in Heidenhammer, Texas, is an avid gun enthusiast and enjoys helping all of his customers to find the gun that's perfect for them. With a large selection of pistols, rifles, and shotguns, finding the right gun becomes easy. Go to ANC Firearms, located at 5819 U.S. Highway 190 in Heidenhammer, or call them 254-983-4417. Pistols, rifles, shotguns, ammo, knives, and a whole lot more. ANC Firearms, 254-983-4417.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who's been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Vitros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. AaronsGunshop.com. Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. Again, it's November 25th, 2017. The number here at the studio is 254-697-6633. Give me an email at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com. Go to the website at aaronsgunshop.com. Become a subscriber to the YouTube channel, Aaron's Gun Shop, and like us on Facebook. support all of our sponsors. They support this show. If you like this show and you want to keep it on the air, I need sponsors, and I need their sponsors to be supported by you, the listener. Now, we've got a lot of things coming up, and in this section, our topic of interest, I want to give you some dates as to what's happening. November 25th, that's today, at 2 o'clock, I'm doing a license to carry class. It got swamped and it's full. I have no spots available. However, on December 2nd, I have another class that I opened up, and that one still has seats available. Now, if you need a license to carry, the course for my classroom is $60. If you already have a license and you want to refresh your memory, it's $40. I highly recommend, if you've got a license to carry and you haven't been checking your penal code and all this kind of stuff, I would highly recommend spend the $40, come and take the refresher course, and get yourself back up to speed as to how and where and why and what is all related to license to carry so that you don't get in trouble, okay? That's December 2nd. The class starts at 2 o'clock, and there are seats still open. December 8th is our next round robin. The round robin competition is a lot of fun. More and more people are showing up to it. And the people who have come to it the first time and are maybe not that good, after the third or fourth time, they're right up there because they understand the stress level. They understand how to manipulate different types of weapons. They know how to handle malfunctions if they occur. They've got their timing down. It doesn't take that long at all. So it's a lot of fun. It's great training. And if you win, you get a great prize. So you can also go to the Aaron's Gun Shop YouTube channel and scroll down and find some of the videos there of the competition. There's one there with the law enforcement benefit shoot that kind of shows it. And there's a couple other videos that were just showing the competition itself. You get to see how you go from gun to gun to gun. You get to see the types of targets that we use. And it's just a lot of fun. And the way I designed my gun range, I have it very low lit. I wanted to give it the effect of street light effect, you know, during the dusk hours, because in broad daylight, okay, everybody can see, but at nighttime, you want to be able to manipulate your handgun during night, see the sights, and I've also got adjustable targets, I've got adjustable lighting, so depending on the type of scenario you want to train for, we can handle it. December 8th is the next round robin. Pay attention to Aaron's Gun Shop Facebook page. We'll be posting blurbs on it as it gets closer to that time. December 9th, I've got a training seminar. And depending on who calls, if you come with a large group, I can do special tweaking to the seminar to fit your particular needs. But in general, we go over a lot of things in the seminar. I'm going to read to you just basically some of the things that we go over. We do mindset and philosophy, which is extremely important. Gun safety and handling. We learn how to point shoot, critical for self-defense. Handgun round robins, it's basically on the round robins on this training seminar is for malfunctions. We'll have all these different guns and different conditions, and the whole basis for the training is to make the gun fire. You want to pull the trigger and you want to hear the gun go click. So we have these guns in many different positions, like a double feed, a stove pipe where it's empty, the magazine's out, slides locked to the rear, whatever configuration you can think of. And as you go from gun to gun to gun, you got to get it in operation, pull the trigger so it goes click. And it's amazing how a lot of people fumble at first, but then once they do it a few times, they can smoothen it out pretty good. We're going to do the shoot house, go room to room, learn all the dangerous things about turning corners, fatal funnels, hallways. And that's the last class we did. They were having an awesome time. They just loved the shoot house, especially when they were being aggressed upon by our acting crackhead. We have somebody go in there being the aggressor towards you, and you get to learn the stress factor as you're potentially going to get shot with some airsoft type of guns. We're going to do live fire shooting drills, and it's basically a rainbow effect. I take you from A to Z on all the different aspects when it comes to defense, and during the course of A to Z, the rainbow effect, all the different areas we're going to highlight and say, oh, I need work here, I need work here, and I need work here, and then you can go and actually focus on those points that are weak for you. Okay, so we've got a lot going on, and the last one here is December 15th, Ladies Night. That's the third Friday of every month is Ladies Night. I don't care what you go as. If you bring a lady and they declare themselves as a woman, they get to shoot for free, okay? So, Ladies Night. Second Fridays of the month is round robin competitions. Third night is Ladies Night. And it's all a good thing. So, hey, Trey, I'll tell you what. We got Janae running up. Ladies and gentlemen, what we're going to do now is we're going to go to our next segment called Tactical Snacking. I love this segment. This is with Janae Goodman. And it's talking about Thanksgiving leftovers, recipes, and ideas. And I'm sure you're going to want to gobble up these recipes, so get your pencil and paper ready. Trey, Let's hear that lovely lady, Janae Goodman.
Hello, my precious pumpkins, and happy Small Business Saturday. It is about that time where I start working up an appetite for shopping and just about anything that isn't Thanksgiving dinner. But I've also got to do something with those leftovers, right? I'm Janae Goodman, and this is Tactical Snacking. We've made it to morning two of leftovers, and hopefully I've caught you before breakfast so I can make the most of your meals. A frittata or a quiche is a fix for this one. Now, the names quiche and frittata sound way more intimidating than they are, I promise. They're both just savory egg dishes with minor differentiating details. It basically boils down to, do you want crust or not? Regardless of which one you make, the prep work will be about the same. In a medium-sized bowl, whisk up 4 large eggs, 1/4 cup of milk or half and half, salt and pepper to taste, and cheese if you please. Set your eggs aside to prep the toppings that you want to fill your egg dish with. About 1 cup of vegetables and meat should be plenty. I think ham or turkey, along with bite-sized green beans and roasted potatoes, would be super delicious in a quiche frittata. Also, add in any diced onion or bell pepper if you happen to have bought too many for turkey day. Sauté your leftover meats and vegetables in a nonstick skillet with 1 tablespoon of oil or butter. Now, this is what makes the difference between the egg dish of your choice. If you're making a quiche, you'll put your sautéed filling directly into a deep dish pie crust and top it with your egg mix before giving it a stir and introducing it to a 350-degree oven for about 40 minutes, or until a knife inserted in the middle comes out clean. Allow that pastry to cool for about 5 minutes before digging in. If you're making a frittata, you'll pour your whisked eggs and dairy into the nonstick skillet that you just sautéed your vegetables in. You can then stick the entire pan in the oven and bake your dish at 375 degrees for about 10 minutes or until the inserted knife comes out clean. If you're feeling sweet instead of savory, you can add a large scoop of sweet potato casserole into your pancake or waffle batter. Make sure to warm up your leftover casserole before introducing it to the batter, especially if you have marshmallows on the top. Adjust the final consistency with a bit of milk or water. Now here's an easy use for the classic cranberry sauce. If you have jellied cranberry sauce, add a small amount of orange juice or water to melt it down in a small saucepan over medium heat. You can drizzle your sauce over shortbread cookies or ice cream. Whole cranberry sauce can be reheated and used as a compote or a flavorful fruit sauce over your favorite desserts, such as pound cake or custard pies. I like to call this next addition stuffin' muffin cups. They're pretty neat for finger food. You'll need to coat a muffin tin with nonstick spray. Press your cornbread dressing or stuffing into each muffin cup, making sure to coat the bottom and the sides and leave an indention in the middle. Bake in a 400-degree oven for 10 to 15 minutes or until the cups are golden brown. Allow them to cool before removing them from the tin. Fill them up with leftover turkey and peas, potatoes, cranberry sauce, or whatever may suit your fancy. They're so stuffin' fun to make and eat. If you want to teach an old dog new tricks, use your cornbread dressing to make hush puppies or cornbread fritters instead. Now this one sounds a bit out of the ordinary, but it is quite fantastic, especially for a leftover lunch. It's a Thanksgiving panini that features turkey sandwiched between cranberry sauce and dressing. Complete the stack with mayo spread and fresh spinach or greens of your choice before grilling it on your panini press or in a nonstick skillet coated with butter. Sweet grated apples will definitely add a nice twist to your panini as well. What goes great with sandwiches? Soup, of course. And oh boy, do I have some savory soups and tips for you. First, remember to hold on to any leftover bones or carcasses for stocks. Add leftover meat for flavorful broth. Second, soup recipes. This Thanksgiving Day soup recipe was shared with me with Kelly Carvias from Houston, Texas. You'll make a mirepoix by taking 1/2 onion, 2 celery stalks, and 2 carrots. Go ahead and dice those up. Coat the bottom of a stock pot with olive oil and saute on medium-high heat until tender. Season with salt and pepper to taste. Add 1/4 of chicken broth and make a bouquet of sage, thyme, and a bay leaf by tying them together with twine. Bring it to a simmer for 10 minutes. Afterwards, add 1/2 cup of chopped green beans. For 5 minutes if fresh, if they're leftover, only 2 minutes. Pour a ladle of the hot broth into 1 cup of gravy, white or brown, whichever you have, and add the warmed gravy to the soup. Reduce it to medium-low heat. debone and chop leftover turkey, and add chopped turkey to the soup and cook for 3 to 5 minutes more. Taste to make sure that it's seasoned as necessary. Remove your bouquet of herbs and ladle hot soup around a scoop of warm leftover dressing or a scoop of mashed potatoes. Go ahead and garnish that with a sprig of fresh thyme. Thanks, Kelly. You can also make a loaded baked potato soup with leftover mashed potatoes. You'll use about a cup of chicken or turkey broth for every 3 cups of mashed potatoes. Go ahead and simmer your soup until thick and creamy, and add a splash of milk or cream if you need to thin it out. Top it off with your usual baked potato toppings, such as sour cream, green onions, cheese, and a bit of ham or bacon. If you don't consider yourself a soup person, you can always use your leftover potatoes to pipe on top of a shepherd's pie. Well, I hope these recipes have stuffed some new tricks into your bag. As always, I appreciate you spending time with me. Reach out at tacticalsnacking@yahoo.com. And until next week, stay hungry, my friends.
Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who's been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Beatros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. AaronsGunshop.com. Time for the master of manners, the communicator of common sense, and the epitome of encyclopedia, Officer Randy Dixon, the voice of law enforcement.
Good Saturday morning, everybody. Here it is. We've survived the Thanksgiving eats. Congratulations to the Rockdale Tigers and the Temple Wildcats continuing on the playoff woes. Forget about the Dallas Cowboys and apparently the Texas Longhorns. But we wish everybody, I hope everybody had a great Thanksgiving, had plenty of turkey and dressing and all that good stuff that goes along with it. Well, today what we're going to do is, you know, after the holidays, it's time for people to start shopping. You know, yesterday was Black Friday. Oop, I can't say that anymore. Yesterday was All Fridays Matter Shopping Day. And so what we're going to do is we're going to talk a little bit about what you should do when you go shopping. You know, the holidays are upon us here. Christmas is, oh man, it's only 4 weeks away. You know, and we're being bombarded with ads from discount merchandisers, from free shopping and other special deals that we see in the news and on the TV and in the newspaper. Shopping during the holiday season may present and does present some very unique dangers, and busy people can become careless and vulnerable to theft and other holiday crimes during this time of year. If you was anywhere around the Temple Mall yesterday or the Austin Malls yesterday or the Waco Malls yesterday, you saw how it was dog-eat-dog world out there, fighting for parking spaces and everything else. What I'd like to do is give you a couple of good tips as you prepare to shop. And I know many of you guys that are listening to this today don't do a lot of the shopping. If you're like me, it's all online or it's all gift cards. But all of you and most of you have somebody that is very significant in your life that you want to protect, someone that you care about. Maybe there's some women out here who are doing shopping today. And we want to ask you to just to consider some of the things that we're going to talk about here in the next few minutes. You know, we're, most of us, and less and less, though, to be honest with you, because of the online businesses nowadays, but there's plenty of people that go shopping in stores. I'm going to give you the best hint that I can think of. Number one, don't carry or don't buy more than you can carry back to your car. I've seen people walking, and they've got things that are so piled up that you can't even see their face, and they can't see anything around them. Only buy at a time what you can carry. If you need to make a trip out to your car, then go back, hide it under somewhere in your car in the trunk. If it's an SUV, put a throw over it, something in the back, then go back and shop some more. And when you go shopping, save all your receipts together to help verify your credit cards and bank statements as they arrive. There's a lot of identity theft and a lot of theft that takes place during the holiday season. And when you get through, you want to calculate how much you spent. And if that extra $1,000 was spent that you hadn't planned or didn't think was spent, maybe you need to check your receipts out. You know, one of the things that I also will tell you is also consider some alternate options to pay for your merchandise. No, that doesn't mean go in there with a gun, rob the place, and walk out with it. That just means use some alternate options. And some of those are real simple. A lot of times you can use virtual credit cards online. You can use money orders, or you can use different type of cash, cashier's checks, etc. But if you carry cash with you, it's really important that you don't flash your cash. Wait till the checkout person or the teller, whatever he's called, ask you before your credit card. A lot of people take their credit cards out right away. They'll lay them on the counter, or they'll play with them in their hands. That lets other people see your credit card and see your credit card numbers. And you say, well, I only do it for a second. It only takes a second to snap a picture, a photograph with an iPhone or Android device, and then they've got it documented. If you're a female, and maybe a man too, I don't know, but carry your purse very close to your body or your wallet inside a coat or front trouser pockets. Pickpockets, thefts do take place during the holiday season. Keep it where you know you've got control of it, where people can't see it, and you can do what you need to do when you need to do with it. A lot of guys keep their wallets in their back pocket, and that's great, except when you're pushed and a lot of people around, there's crowds. Put it in your front pocket. You got a lot more sensation in that area, a lot more chance to be able to see what's going on, and that way if somebody runs their hands down your pants, you know that they're getting something they shouldn't be getting. Also, if you see someone that has left bags or unattended or packages left unattended around the place you're shopping, do me a favor. Go tell a security officer or a police officer. We don't want to think that there could be any terrorism that goes on during this time of year, but, you know, there's some awful things have happened in the last 36 to 48 hours across our world. So be sure, and if you see things that are unattended, backpacks that are unattended, let someone know. Now, how many of you have to go shopping with small children? Man, that was a horror when I was a father of young people, to take kids to the store, take them to buy things. If you're going to go shopping with them, with your children, make a plan just in case you get separated. The most horrible thing that's ever happened to me was we had gone with my youngest son, my oldest son now, who is about 4 years old at the time, shopping at Six Flags Mall up in Dallas, Arlington area. His mom and I had been shopping. We were looking at windows. He was between us. We stopped, but he didn't know that we stopped, and he kept walking. For about an hour, we had no sense, no idea where our son was. The happiest day of my life was when I saw a police officer walking down the hallways of the mall with him in tow. Watch your children at all times. You know, if you're going to go with a bunch of people, y'all have a direct time, a meeting place. All of you have cell phones nowadays. Everybody has cell phones. Keep in contact with your cell phones. Also, if you have young children, and this is really important, folks, if you have grandchildren, teach them, instruct them that it's so important that they know how to contact mall personnel, police officers, security officers, to tell them that they're lost and they've been separated. Don't, whatever you do, don't let them just wander around the store. Give them directions. Give them direct information on what they need to do to protect themselves. Now, let's say that we've gone shopping. Man, we've got all these goodies we bought. We've got tons of things. But now it's 9 o'clock at night when the mall's closing. So we're going to have to walk out to our cars in a parking lot. Well, this time of night, at 9 o'clock at night, guess what? It's pitch dark. Last night, going by the Temple Mall, two of their night standards were out, and it was deadly, deadly dark at night. Don't carry large amounts of cash with you when you're walking out to your car. Use checks, credit cards, as we said before, to make your purchases. You know, if you're going to use an ATM, make sure you go to an area that has a high traffic volume. Don't go to an isolated ATM. And if you do, be ever conscious. Look around you. Put your head on a swivel, just like any other thing. Teach your wife, teach your children, teach your husbands that they need to watch what's around them and watch and know that the area they're in. If they see somebody that's walking up, get back in your car and lock the doors. In any case, don't leave your car running when you get out of an ATM machine if you can't pull right up next to it. Beware of any strangers that are approaching you for any reason. You know, and I'll be honest with you, it's always best to shop during the daylight hours. And I know that sometimes we can't just do that, but there's safety in light. And most of your incidences that occur in most of the shopping areas, the malls, whether it's here, Waco, Killeen, or whatever, most of those happen during the evening hours, and it's just safer in the daytime hours. If you're going to put things in your car, and I said this just moments ago, if you're going to carry things, be sure and cover them up in your car, put them in the trunk. So many of our vehicles nowadays are SUVs that have no trunk whatsoever in them. But that doesn't mean you can't hide what you've got. You know, put them in the back floorboard, cover them up with something, put them in the back end, cover them up with a throw, a tarp, or something. You know, one of the other things, and a lot of people don't understand this, if you're going to go shopping, don't wear expensive jewelry when you're going shopping. Don't make yourself a target, especially you ladies. Keep your jewelry, your high-dollar stuff at home. I'm sure you're going to want to wear your wedding rings or whatever you may have. But keep the expensive things at home so people don't see them when you're going out and about. I've known several people that have had very high expensive jewelry. And during the holiday season, they bought some of the Diamondique off of QVC. And that's what they wore and still wearing their expensive things when they're out and about. Now, how about online safety? Because it's the holiday season, and most of us, if you're like me, don't like to shop. I can't stand crowds of a shopping place. So I do my shopping online. When in doubt, there's an old saying, throw it out. Delete links and emails, tweets, posts, and online advertising that you just feel is some kind of a scam. Think before you act. Be wary of others who are offering amazing deals on things that you know that aren't that's not up to snuff and that may not be good. And make sure your site is legitimate. You know, I've talked about that in the past on identity theft. But if you're going to buy something online, make sure that whatever you do, wherever you pay for it, make sure that the URL up at the top has the S at the end of the HTTP. If it does not have https://, don't put your credit card, don't put your information on that. It is a non-secure, absolutely unsecure pay site. Always look for that S at the end. You know, protect your personal information, folks, during the holidays. You know, check the website's privacy policy and know your information. You know, Amazon, things of that nature, even eBay, PayPal, those individuals, unless they've been hacked, have extreme high records, good records of safety. Not trying to say them over the others, but there's always some places that you need to look. You need to keep a paper trail. Save your records online of your online transactions. I buy a lot of stuff online when the shopping, and what I'll do is I'll print out the receipt, and I keep that receipt until my item comes in and then until my bank account comes in or my bank the register that shows all the things that I've spent during that month. Now, last but not least, folks, I know I know shopping and the holidays are a great time, but you got to make some preparations. We talked last week about driving safety and about holiday safety. Well, this whole driving time of year is nuts. You've got people that are in their cars. You got people that have short tempers. You know, I ask you pray for the trooper over on I-45 and his family. But one of the things that I will ask you also to do is remember, here it is. This is Saturday afternoon. Or fixing to be Saturday afternoon. And we're going to have traffic starting up. People are going to be going home. And tomorrow is going to be horrendous. If you're going to go, if you've got to go home, or if you've got to travel tomorrow, leave yourself plenty of time. The backup on Wednesday afternoon on I-35 was in excess of 2 hours. 2 hours added to a two-hour trip makes a four-hour trip, and then people get their tempers are up, their patience is down. We've got to make sure that we understand that during the holiday season, everybody's trying to do something and everybody's trying to go somewhere. Be careful, be safe, and always use your common sense. There's no place for road rage during the holidays. And one of the things I'll also suggest, just real quickly, we're going to talk about that on home security during the holidays the next couple of weeks. But if you're bringing gifts and items home, make sure that you put them out of sight, out of mind, and not from the kids or someone like that. But there are people that might be coming in your house, service technicians or whatever. Make sure you always keep those gifts out of mind. It's what you're buying, what you're spending. It's nobody's business what you spend. It's only your business. When you're traveling, and we talked about that in a segment with the attorney a while ago, I always recommend that you go protected. Take your weapon with you. Know how to use your weapon. Get training on that weapon. Holidays are not a safe time, folks, and everybody knows that. And police work or any other kind of work during that time of year, the crime goes up, it spikes, and robberies seem to also spike. Be safe, be careful, and watch what you're doing. Always be conscious. And I'm going to say it again, keep your head on a swivel, keep your head safe, keep your family safe. So until next Saturday, folks, I want to wish all of you, once again, a belated happy Thanksgiving. Be safe out there, be careful out there, and take care of each other. Have a great week.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who's been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Beatros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. AaronsGunshop.com.
Capilino Dodd Krebs Law Firm focuses on cases involving asbestos exposure, mesothelioma, birth trauma, defective products.
Welcome back, everybody. We had a little hiccup there, but we're back now. Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. Today's November 25th, 2017, and we're going to go into our product spotlight segment here. This segment is sponsored by ANC Firearms and Heidenhammer, and Arch Kuhn's great guy. Known him for a long time. But go to aaronsgunshop.com's Facebook page to look at this rifle, because we're going to be going over the Ruger Mini 14 Tactical Rifle. And if you check out the Facebook page, you'll see the picture of me holding it. It'll give you the details on the price tag there. Or you can call ANC Firearms at 254-983-4417 to buy or put it on hold, the Ruger Mini 14 Tactical Rifle. And they got great guys. They got Dennis, Mike, Clint. They're all there ready to help you out. And they've got all sorts of things to look at. They've got pistols, rifles, shotguns, knives, holsters, accessories, reloading equipment, and so much more. And it's a great place to just check out because the antiqueness of the shop itself is pretty cool. And ANC Firearms supports this radio program, so please support them by going and giving them a chance to serve you. All right, now I'm gonna, like I always do, I get an article from somebody else to see what their point of view is, to see if it matches mine or they come up with something that I didn't think about. So I got this one off of Guns and Shooting Online. It's the Ruger Mini 14 Tactical 223.223 carbine rifle. And it reads as follows. I will interject as time goes on, but it starts off like this. Having recently, and in the past, fired what are alleged to be among the better semi-automatic AR-15 clones on the market, we are convinced that the Ruger Mini 14 is a superior design. Ruger firearms are made in the USA and well known for both value and performance. After due diligence and careful consideration, we chose a Mini 14 for this rare Guns and Shooting Online review of a tactical rifle. And I dissected this article. It's a long article, but I just took out the parts that I wanted to make sure got read. As the name implies, the Ruger Mini 14 is based on a scaled-down 223 size M14 type action, which is itself based on the famous M1 Garand action of World War II and Korea fame. As a result, all critical components of the barreled action are steel. Unlike AR-15s, we don't think there are any aluminum alloy parts in the Mini 14. As originally designed, Mini 14s had hardwood stocks, but later plastic stocks were also offered along with stainless steel barreled actions. The most recent variation in the Mini 14 tactical review here, which has a 16 and 1/8 inch barrel and an ATI Strike Force folding telescoping stock with ATI Scorpion recoil absorbing material at the pistol grip and butt pad. The collapsible stock can be set for 6 lengths of pull. Now, let me tell you something about this stock. I've got Mossberg 500 shotguns, and I like them in pistol configurations. And I got the ATI stocks with the collapsible stocks, but which had those Scorpion recoil absorbing materials. And they work, everybody. If you're thinking about getting a stock to absorb some recoil, the way the pistol grip feels and the way you shoot it on your shoulder with that recoil pad, it really does minimize the recoil effect on the weapon. So consider that if you're going to be putting a stock or a pistol grip type of variation onto one of your rifles. Back to the article. This ATI stock incorporates no less than 6 detachable sling swivel studs and 4 plastic Picatinny accessory rails. They've got a 7-inch rail on top, 2-inch rails on both sides, and the bottom of the fore end. The Mini 14 also has a sling swivel in front of the forend, making a total of 7 sling attachment points. And that's pretty good because a lot of people have different ways of carrying their weapon. Some people do the standard sling. Some people like the tactical sling in front of them or a single point sling. So there's so many different configurations you can do with all the different sling attachment points. The black plastic Strike Force stock gives the Mini 14 Tactical a visual appearance more similar to an AR-type rifle than an M14 infantry rifle. The Mini 14 uses a true gas operated action, which eliminates the problems created by the AR's direct gas impingement operation. In our experience, an out of the box Mini 14 is both more reliable and more accurate than equivalent AR-15 type rifles. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I would beg to differ. I think the ARs are extremely good weapons. So this is just the author's personal opinion. The investment cast steel receiver and machine steel barrel and bolt are the basic blocks upon which every Mini 14 is built. The supplied front sight is a blade protected by wings on each side in the style of the M1 and M14 infantry rifles. The rear sight is a receiver-mounted aperture peep sight. The rear sight is user-adjustable for windage and elevation. These are good iron sights. The Mini 14 safety is a sheet metal blade in the front of the sheet metal trigger guard, similar in operation to the M1 Garand safety. The forward position is fire, back is safe. And the way I always remember doing that, when you take advantage of the safety mechanism, if the safety is pushed into the trigger guard, this is Matt speaking, if the safety blade is pushed into the trigger guard, it's in my way. And so I say, if it's in my way, I can't shoot. Something's in my way, I can't shoot. If I push it out of the way, the safety is now out of my way, everything's clear. So that's how I remember which one is which. Okay, some of the tactical specifications for the Mini 14 Tactical. It's a 5.56 NATO or a 223 Remington. Magazine capacity is 20. That's the, you can get larger size magazines, but it comes with a 20 round detachable mag. It's alloy steel, blue finished. It comes with the ATI black synthetic collapsible folding stock. Length of pull is anywhere from 11.88 inches to 15.62 inches. The sights, blade front, adjustable peep rear, Ruger scope bases are included. Barrel length is 16.12 inches, approximately 17.5 with the flash hider. Twist is 1 and 9, trigger pull 6.5 pounds, and overall length collapsed is 34 inches. Totally extended is 37.75 inches. The authors here decided to outfit the Mini 14 Tactical as a home defense rifle. We therefore equipped it with some typical accessories beloved by the tactical crowd, meaning flashlights and lasers and things of that nature. It looks intimidating to those who don't know much about firearms, which is probably the idea. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I've got the Mini 30. I've got the Mini 14. I love them because they're the type of guns you just throw on the ground, pick it up, and it keeps firing. Okay? However, they can be sensitive to certain types of ammo, especially the Mini 30s. So you just want to, when you get your weapon, just make sure you feed it right with the right type of food, and it's going to give you lots of years of fun and probably game, hunting game. I've hunted many game with the Mini 30. I've done elk, I've done deer, I've done hogs, and it gets the job done. So the Mini 14, if you go to ANC Firearms in Heidenhammer, they have it right there on the shelf, or go to aaronsgunshop.com Facebook page, take a look at the picture, give them a call at 254-983-4417. Tell them you heard it on the radio, go on by there, check it out, pick it up, buy it, and support them because they support us, all right? So, Trey, we're going to go to a break. And when we come back, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to have a hodgepodge of things. I'm going to read a couple articles. We're going to talk about things, have some roundtable discussions, and we'll take it from there. So we'll see you on the other side.
Sometimes you just need more. But what do you do when that yard equipment needs more or just isn't working like it used to? The answer is Cameron's Bold Engine, formerly Cameron Seed Company. For friendly service and quantity work, stop it at 408 West Bath. They provide all your outdoor power equipment needs. Check out their selection of Echo, Snapper, and zero-turn big dog mowers. Power through the summer with Cameron's Bold Engine. Call 254-697-3452 or stop in at 408 West Bath.
Cabellino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron focuses on cases involving personal injury litigation, including asbestos exposure and mesothelioma. At Cabellino Dodd Krebs Law Firm, you are never treated like a number. Cases are accepted on a contingency basis, so clients do not have to pay out of their pocket. Contact Cabellino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron today. Call 888-MESO-FIRM.
Central Texas Martial Arts of Rocktail offers martial arts classes Tuesdays and Thursdays between 5:30 p.m. and 7 p.m. in their 1,800 square foot facility, which is located in Rockdale at 973 Highway 77. Learn confidence and control with mind and body at the Central Texas Martial Arts Academy in Rockdale. Call or text Master Cindy Key at 254-721-2775 or just stop by. Central Texas Martial Arts Academy in Rockdale, 254-721-2775.
Arch Coons, the owner of ANC Firearms in Heidenhammer, Texas, is an avid gun enthusiast and enjoys helping all of his customers to find the gun that's perfect for them. With a large selection of pistols, rifles, and shotguns, finding the right gun becomes easy. Go to ANC Firearms, located at 5819 U.S. Highway 190 in Heidenhammer, or call them 254-983-4417. Pistols, rifles, shotguns, ammo, knives, and a whole lot more. ANC Firearms, 254-983-4417.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who's been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Petros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. AaronsGunshop.com. Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program, November 25th, 2017. Again,
today's hits and country favorites. KMIL 105.1 The Ranch.
Is that going over? Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, if you want to become part of the show, the number here is 254-697-6633. You know what I like about this, Trey? You know, I've been doing the radio show for quite a while on different stations, and I remember when I first did the show, you're obviously going to be a little bit nervous. It reminds me of when Ross did it the very first time. Totally different from right. how he is now. And now we have a little hiccup like this, and I went, whatever, no big deal. And we're all professionals here, so I like that. It's nice and fun. You can have a lot of good times, even when you have problems arise. Ladies and gentlemen, once again, if you want to be a part of the show, 254-697-6633, or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com. I don't have a guest today, but I do have Trey sitting in front of me, and I've got the Chief sitting next to me here to my right, and I'm going to go over a few things, and we're going to discuss a few things and just have a chit-chat. So if you want to become part of the chit-chat, you can give us a call, 254-697-6633. I remember I would tell people that Kennedy was shot by more than one person, and they would look at me like I've got two heads. And then Trump releases all this stuff, and it shows that from the medical reports that he got shot from another direction. So there's two shooters, okay? I knew it. I could tell. I could see what happens to a body when it gets hit by a bullet. I know. I'm not stupid. I'm not stupid. I can see it. It's clear as day. So I've got this article in front of me here, and I wrote a note up on the top. It says, who still doesn't believe that our... who still doesn't believe that our government starts wars. Let me read to you what I've got here. Declassified files reveal government plot to carry out Soviet false flag attacks in U.S. to start war. Where did I get this? This is from Daily Sheeple. As the deep state continues to push the Russian election interference narrative with no concrete evidence, the damage to U.S.-Russia relations continues to grow. Sadly, those who continue to buy the Russiagate conspiracy theory have forgotten the U.S. government's history when it comes to the propaganda used to start wars and bolster the military-industrial complex. A recent revelation from the newly released JFK files can now help put this entire Russian hacking scenario into context, as it has been the subject of previous propaganda campaigns. On March 22, 1962, a meeting held by the special group, which according to an encyclopedia on the Central Intelligence Agency, included Attorney General Robert Kennedy, CIA Director John McCone, National Security Advisor McGeorge Bundy, and Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff Lehman Lemnitzer, discussed the creation of a false flag attack on the United States to be blamed on the Soviets. According to the documents, the U.S. government wanted to manufacture or obtain Soviet aircraft so they could launch an attack on American or friendly bases and use those attacks as a pretext for war. According to the previously top-secret classified documents, quote, there is a possibility that such aircraft could be used in a deception operation designed to confuse enemy planes in the air, to launch a surprise attack against enemy installations, or in a provocation operation in which Soviet aircraft would appear to attack U.S. or friendly installations in order to provide an excuse for U.S. intervention. As the Daily Caller notes, the notion of using fake Soviet aircraft in a so-called false flag attack was first revealed in Robert Dallek's book An Unfinished Life, John F. Kennedy, 1917 to 1963, which was released in 2001. Dallek's book says that the idea to manufacture or obtain Soviet aircraft was suggested by CIA Director McCone. However, the released documents say it was raised by Attorney General Kennedy. As people continue to believe the warmongering rhetoric from the state, they also continue to forget America's history of lying to the people to get them to accept war. Indeed, the JFK files have now given us at least two incidents of the United States planning false flag attacks against its own people as a pretext to wage war. As reported last month, the JFK files also revealed the plans for another false flag attack to be blamed on Cuba. In the document, which was marked TS for top secret, the U.S. military revealed its plans to trick Americans into war with Cuba. The plans were to create and carry out false flag terror attacks against American citizens and use them as propaganda to gain support for the war against Fidel Castro. In the documents, officials noted that the plans for the attacks were approved, and the Joint Chiefs merely needed to pick one of the nine pretexts to use to trick U.S. citizens into war. The plans involved killing innocent people and injuring others and making sure these instances would be widely publicized as propaganda to start an unjust war. We could develop a communist Cuban terror campaign in the Miami area, in other Florida cities, and even in Washington. The terror campaign could be pointed at Cuban refugees seeking haven in the United States. We could sink a boatload of Cubans en route to Florida, real or simulated, the document reads. Notice how callous these monsters sound when they're talking about drowning a boatload of Cubans, which would have likely contained innocent children, to start a bogus war for profit. The document continues. We could foster attempts on the lives of Cuban refugees in the United States, even to the extent of wounding in instances to be widely publicized, exploding a few plastic bombs in carefully chosen spots. The arrest of a Cuban agent and the release of prepared documents sustaining Cuban involvement also would be helpful in projecting the idea of an irresponsible government. When reading the above documents, one should naturally be inclined to begin questioning every single war America has ever entered. It becomes perfectly clear that the U.S. government cares not about deceiving its own citizen and killing innocent people so they can send our brothers, sisters, mothers, and fathers off to countries to die so the fat cats in D.C. can bolster their war portfolios on Wall Street. Now, ladies and gentlemen, you know, when you do it twice, you know it's being done more than twice, okay? And when you hear this article and then you look at all the other things that are going on and how all the media... marches it to the same beat, and you have somebody focused on, they did this, and they start making that look like the boogeyman, it kind of makes you wonder, okay, the media's working with the government's working with the media, they're setting up an agenda, they're propagandizing something in favor of us doing something terrible. Go ahead, Trey.
The quote you're looking for there is, once is a chance, twice is a coincidence, three times, that's a conspiracy.
Whatever you want to call it, brother, but that's what sure heck looks like. What do you think about that, Chief? Take this mic.
Honestly, I believe it is more than anything a conspiracy, because only during wartime do people profit. You think about all the oil companies. Think about the manufacturers, ammunition. Think about the big companies who create everything. And when during wartime, they're constantly busy. There's millions and billions of dollars being spent toward it across the whole world. And I think it's all in the name of oil, if you think about it.
Yeah,
and I'm not a conspiracy theorist at all. But I do think that we, people,
is it a
nations,
conspiracy when you get documents that are released from the government that have been held for how many years since his death? They hide it for a reason.
Right.
They didn't want to show it for a reason. And here when you get it documented that this is what they do, you know they do it more often.
Right.
It's just somebody hasn't pulled up those files yet to write it in an article.
And how many since 1963 have happened that we'll never know about?
Exactly. You know, there's like, I was thinking about this, there's four types of people. There's really three types of people. There's the sheep.
Right.
Then there's the wolves. Then there's the sheepdogs. But then you got some of the sheep, they just haven't woke up yet to become sheepdogs. So when you read these articles, we got lots of sheep out there who just believe what's written to them. Sheepdogs, the wolves go, yeah, we're doing this because of profit. Sheepdogs are going, hey, man, I know you're doing this for profit. And the sheep goes, I don't know what the hell's going on. Go ahead, who's this? Let's see, we got a call coming.
KMIL, you're on the air.
Hey, is that Trey? This is Mark. How you doing, fella?
This is for us.
Say that again.
Hey, this is Mark. I'm doing a contract north of Dallas, and I just wanted to make a comment on Matt's show today.
Is this Mark? Hey, brother, what's going on?
Hey, brother, I'm doing this contract north of Dallas right now, but I had something really important I wanted to talk to you about on the air, if that's okay.
Well, go ahead, brother. You got the time. Go ahead. Everybody's listening with, they're just dying to hear what you got to say.
Well, I'm glad that you've got all your listeners listening to this, because this is important. 2 weeks ago, we had a mass shooting in Southland, Texas at some church. It was terrible. It was tragic. It got everybody's attention. Now, 26 people, unfortunately, were killed. but that was like the 40th or the 50th gun violent attack towards a church this year. But 26 people died, and that got a lot of people's attention. They started talking about church security plans and putting crisis response teams in place. So not only you know about this, but you and I have worked on a briefing, a training seminar for a church. I've done a few briefings for a church. And all these guys that I talk to, they all want to say, hey, I've got a concealed weapon. I don't mind killing somebody. And I have to remind these chuckleheads and everybody out there with the CHL, you're not out there to kill people. You're out there to save lives. We don't take lives, we save lives. And when you do that, when you're part of a crisis response team, or if you're getting a CHL, you have an inherent responsibility to train with it. And Matt, last night at your gun shop, I was blown away. You had some quality people there last night. One guy brought his family, and I was in such a rage before I got to your gun shop because I invited 8 crisis response team people in 2 different church plans to be there and train with their weapon. And Matt, I got to tell you, man, I was enraged. One guy said, well, Mark, I know we talked about it at church, but I'm a little bit too old to be carrying my gun all the time, so I leave it in the truck. And Matt, I lost my cool. I said, listen, Chucklehead, your truck doesn't have a CHL. It cannot defend itself with your pistol. You're carrying that weapon to defend your life and your wife's life and other people's lives. And over the Christmas season, over this holiday season, people break into cars. So he just gave some crook a Christmas present because he left his gun unsecured in his truck. What a chucklehead. So my message to your listeners today is be responsible with your weapons. If you've got a weapon, it's there to save your life. Don't leave it in the truck for it to get stolen. All right?
Hey, Mark, you know how... You know in the training seminar, I always ask, what are you on a scale from 1 to 10? 10 being... Wherever I am, I've always got the weapon on me or about my person. And obviously, we take into effect, if you work at a federal facility, you can't take it on there. But whenever you are able to carry it, what are you on a scale from 1 to 10? And, you know, you get a lot of people say a 10, and you get some people say 3 or 4. And you ask them, why do you carry the gun in the first place? And it's to protect myself and my family. And you say, well, why, if you're protecting yourself and your family, why are you at a level 3? Can you determine when the bad guy is going to pick your 30% that you're carrying the gun? So if you have that attitude, well, you know, I just put it in the truck and I'll go get it if I need it. It's not a good thought process for security and defense of yourself and your family and loved ones. So the attitude is, if you're going to defend yourself with that gun, you need to train with it. You need to have it on your person. Otherwise, it doesn't do any good.
And Matt, you're absolutely right, buddy. You're right about it all the time. But when we were done with that training seminar that last week, everybody walked out of there, and they were so far better than when they first walked in there. And they made all these comments on your Facebook page, I think, or on your website. Man, you got to train. And where better can you train but Aaron's Gun Shop? Man. I tell you, Matt, you've got the golden goose, but I'm going to have to go. I got to get back on the job, bro.
Sounds good, buddy. Thanks for the call. All right, we'll talk to you soon. That was Mark. That's one of my instructors at the shop there. He's excellent. He's got massive amount of experience. I got Zoltan, you know, our Hungarian Special Forces guy. He's another one of our instructors. They've just got such a plethora of information. It's fantastic. I am blessed to be around all these people. I've got a great board operator. I got the chief here. I got... Attorney Extraordinaire Ben Ross Watson, Rick Dodd, we got Janae, Cindy Key, the whole, I mean, we're blessed to have all these people. ANC Firearms, the works. But, all right, let's get back to here. We got a few minutes left. Let's get back to what we were talking about on the false flags and all that. Chief, weren't you saying something?
Yeah, I just felt like, you know, in our country, we've tried to cover up so much, and, you know, this country is founded on openness. But we cover up so many things, and not only in our government, but local government and county government, whatever it may be. But it's time that the people understand that they need to check out things for themselves. And I truly believe that, you know, oil is the leading factor for many of our wars around the world.
It could be oil, it could be lithium, it could be poppy seeds, it could be all sorts of good resources. But that's what all wars are fought over, resources.
You know, and I know that I think about, you look at the stock market. When does the stock market really go up? When people are spending money, when their things are being bought. And you look at the lowering of the stock market in times of lull, and I don't know. I don't ever want anybody to say that I'm a conspiracy theorist, but I do believe that there's a lot of things that are happening globally right now that are based upon the fact that people want to get ahead in this
world.
You
know, I got a problem with what you just said there. You don't want anybody worrying about your conspiracy theories. When you start thinking and questioning, it's because you're an attentive citizen.
Right.
If you're a sheep going by and not paying attention, you're hazardous to this country. I think Jefferson said, and I'm going to slaughter it, the thing that preserves us is an informed citizenry or something like that. I got it up on the wall. I should read it more often. But if you're dumbed down and not paying attention, that's when all the other smart wolves go out there and start making it bad for us, and we're just in our phones not paying attention while the other ones are doing it for sordid gain.
Right.
So if you think I'm a conspiracy theorist, you know what? Screw you, because you're ignorant. And ignorant means your lack of information. You don't know what you're talking about because of a lack of information. Go, Trey, I see you want to say something.
Yeah, an informed citizenry is at the heart of a dynamic democracy.
There you go.
And that's true. That's very true, because, you know, and I think it ought to be, I honestly, truly think that every citizen should know what goes on in their city. They should know what goes on in their county and their government. Just look at when we have city or county elections, how many people run for an office? Most time, nobody.
Yes.
Because nobody wants to get involved. It's time people stand up and quit being sheep and start being wolves and doing the right thing.
Have you ever seen a city council meeting squirm when they have citizenry come in just to look and watch and see what's going on? They squirm in their seats because it's like... And they're always raised up on this platform looking down upon you as you're at the podium there trying to sell your case. And don't misunderstand me. I'm very respectful to the way things are set up if it's done properly. But the point is, it's power can become dangerous. What's the term, Trey? You're always helping me here. Power
corrupts.
Corrupts. Yeah. And
absolute power is a whole lot more fun.
Well, I happen to know one police chief very closely. That in a council meeting one night, when a number of people showed up, including some police officers, after the meeting was over, he was chastised very readily by his boss, because what were they doing there? People have a right to be there.
That's right.
They have a right to be there. And if that chamber, if that council, that commissioner's court is full, that's the way it ought to be. It should be that way.
I was born in 1963, and from 1963 to 2006, I had faith. I was one of those people who had faith that my government's doing well, the people in charge are doing well, and then I had an awakening. And I don't trust anybody. I don't trust anybody in positions of power. I mean, I voted for Trump. I like Trump, but, you know, he's a politician too. There's things behind the scenes. I just pray that his manipulation is for the good and it's not for sordid gain, okay?
Oh, I trust people. I trust them to work in their own self-interest and self-enrichment.
And there's nothing wrong with that as long as the other end of it is to help other people too. Yeah, of course you got to take care of yourself. But man,
don't do it to screw other people over.
Yes.
Okay? People do not understand, and I really think that, you know, when someone comes out and they tell you they're a good person, there's a problem there. You should know whether they're good or not. You shouldn't have to have somebody tell you they're a good person or a good politician. And I think every politician needs to stand up, and they need to welcome input from their fellow citizens, not cringe when they see somebody coming.
I cannot explain this clearly. I've read it. I haven't studied upon it where I'm good enough to reiterate it. But if you look at the junior senators and congressmen and all this that go in, they have these positions they have to hold, and they have to generate so much money before they're allowed to go to different levels of importance. And when you hear that, you're thinking like, oh my gosh, you got to buy yourself into to these different levels as compared to being on the merits of your thought process. Right.
And
experience.
It's so expensive that from the time you get elected to the time you try to get reelected, you're spending most of your time raising more money to get reelected. You're not spending your time doing your job, listening to your constituents, doing the research on the agendas and the issues. you're spending your time trying to get reelected.
Right.
That's right.
Make a name for themselves.
And that's, you know, it's a sad, sick reality, but it's a symptom of the system.
Wouldn't you think term limits would be a great concept idea? And I got no problems with if somebody gets elected for 6 years, but they can't get, they can't go for reelection, but then after the next term, they could try back again. That's fine. There's a break. And if people say, well, you did your 6 years, you've got to get out because that's what the law says. We vote somebody else new and they did a terrible job, we're going to vote you back in. I got no problem with that. It's the consecutive terms, year after year after year. And I think that happens.
I'd go even further than that, but that's just me.
I do too.
I'd go one term and done. You got one chance to do right, and then you're done. And you hand it off to the next person, and they got one chance to keep going right. And then you're done.
I know,
that way it doesn't become a career. That's the problem. It's become a career.
But sometimes, though, a person in that position was meant for that position. They can do a fantastic job. So they do their 6 years, they're out, and if the people want them back, he actually had to do, or she had to actually go through the efforts of trying to get reelected based on their merits, as compared to sitting in there. And it's always easier for the person sitting in position to get reelected than somebody coming in to try to take out the person.
The way the system is set up, it's set up to not allow variation.
Right.
You know, you have one of two choices, and the choice that usually gets picked is the one that's already in there. But, you know, the parties are going to throw their war chests behind their candidate. And, you know, when you've got one guy that has a, you know, $120 million in his war chest, and you got Joe Blow over here that could do a good job, but he's only got, you know, $15,000 in his, there's no way he's going to get elected. It's a numbers game. It's a money game.
Okay. Any final points on that before we take a quick break?
The only point I've got to make is that for everybody, you need to get involved with your city, county, and state government. Quit expecting the right thing to be done. Get in there and look and know what's being done.
What does it take to get people to get involved? We say this week after week after week, and it's like nothing changes. And
education.
Yeah.
It takes education to get people involved. Not indoctrination, education.
And you know what? The way you figure it out, this country was on top of their game. I think it was in the 50s. And if you figure out when we were top in mathematics and reading and all this kind of stuff, and you say, when did we start declining, and you find that point and you find out what changed, that's the problem. All right, look, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, I'm probably going to do a quick gun demo, and then we're going to have Master Cindy Key. See you on the other side.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who's been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Butros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. AaronsGunShop.com.
Central Texas Martial Arts of Rockdale offers martial arts classes Tuesdays and Thursdays between 5:30 p.m. and 7 p.m. in their 1,800 square foot facility, which is located in Rockdale at 973 Highway 77. Learn confidence and control with mind and body at the Central Texas Martial Arts Academy in Rockdale. Call or text Master Cindy Key at 254-721-2775 or just stop by. Central Texas Martial Arts Academy in Rockdale, 254-721-2775.
Don't miss it.
Sunday morning,
9 a.m. till noon.
Wake up!
Gospel music at its best right here at 105.1 FM. Southern Gospel.
Walk on water kind of day.
Country Gospel.
All right, we're back. Little problem on the board there, but
sorry
right.
About that.
Not a problem. It's November 25th. We're finishing up the show here. I'm going to do a quick comment about some gun handling, and then we're going to get Master Key, owner of Central Texas Martial Arts, giving us words of wisdom on how to protect ourselves and she'll probably give us some visual effects as well, and I'll put that on our YouTube page. Ladies and gentlemen, when I'm at the range and we're doing competitions, I get to see a lot of things that are probably not the best way to handle a weapon, and one of the things that I noticed the most was flip-flopping of a handgun before you go to shoot it, like loading it and then actually getting to shoot it. If you're a left-handed shooter, the gun should always be in your left hand. If you're a right-handed shooter, the gun should always be in your right hand. Now, I don't know if I'll get this on a video or not, so I'm going to try and explain it real quick in a minute or two here. I've got a 1911 in my hand. What's the first thing we do? I'm going to listen. That's right. Clear it. Magazine out. Magazine's empty. Slide to the rear. Chamber's empty. Magazine well is clear. Gun is clear. Okay? I'm a left-handed shooter. If the gun is on the table and I'm loading the magazine and all of a sudden I pick up the gun in my right hand and I'm picking it up like this, and that is not properly, I'm holding it any way but properly in my right hand, and then I load the weapon with the magazine and then I put it back in my left hand, do you know how much time I just wasted? If I pick up the weapon in my strong hand and I'm a left-handed shooter and the slide is locked to the rear, and I pick up the mag in my right hand. I wanted to talk about indexing too, but time is limited, so we're just going to stick with this. The gun is always between you and the threat. And because I have a left dominant eye, which is another class we can teach, I have the gun in my left hand. Left dominant hand, left dominant eye. The gun is in between me and the threat. The tip of the barrel is in my line of sight from me to the threat. It's in my left hand. I pick up the magazine with my right hand. It goes in the magazine well. And then I drop the slide forward. And instantaneously, the gun is in line, ready to fire. If I start hip-hopping this gun around, bouncing it back and forth from hand to hand, I'm losing valuable time. It shows improper training. And it can just lead for a bad grip, which means your second or third shots will not be as good because the gun's bouncing around in your hand. So, remember, if you're a left-handed shooter, keep the gun in your left hand at all times, finger off the trigger, muzzle pointing in a safe direction. Load it with your right hand. If you're a right-handed shooter, keep the weapon in your right hand at all times, unless your arm is injured or hand is injured. Keep the muzzle pointing in a safe direction. Load it with your left hand. Get the gun ready to fire, okay? That's a quick tip. Write it down. Learn it. Try it. Practice it. Empty. No ammo in the room, okay? Now, Ms. Key, are you ready to tear it up here on the airwaves? Let's get you over here. I'm going to get out of the way, get you on video, so if we can post this, whatever you're going to show us, we can show it. So, Ms. Key, the radio waves are yours.
Hi, everybody. What I'm going to talk about today is redirection, and that's redirection in your the initial conflict. If somebody is talking ugly to you and you respond back with ugly, that's just going to escalate everything. So you want to try to de-escalate that and redirect their thought process and their conversation to you. And I'm be honest, I'm a little bit chubby, and I have gone to tournaments, and I'll give you an example. My daughter one time went with me, and I took a group, and another little girl called me fat, and they got into a fist fight, actually. Because my daughter punched her. You know, you call my mom fat. Well, that wasn't quite the right way to react. So when I went over there, my daughter says, well, she called you fat, Mom. You know, you need to do something. I'm like, no, I don't need to do anything because I am kind of fluffy. You know, I'm kind of fluffy. But that's an advantage for me on two hands is I have more weight to throw behind my punches, which those skinny girls didn't appreciate. But also I'm a little bit more grounded than somebody lighter. If I get hit, I won't go flying. So there's advantages to being a little fluffy.
And harder to kidnap.
Yes, I would be harder to kidnap. That's another advantage. But she didn't redirect the girl's comments. And so I'm fluffy. Yes, I'm fat. It's okay. You know, it's all good. If somebody's talking ugly to you, just kind of redirect the conversation. And then, I mean, start backing away, making space if they're getting too close. But if that doesn't work and they get ugly and uglier, then, you want to have your hands up. And then that comes in for the redirection. If they go to grab, I'm not going to stand here.
You'll see this on video later this week.
I'm not going to stand here if he grabs. He's a left-handed person. If he grabs with his left, I'm going to try not to go to the center of him. I want to get behind him. So I would step to my right, and I would press and do my strikes there, but I'm redirecting him in that direction. If there's a wall here, that's even better, because if he grabs for me, boom, I'm just going to slam him into that wall, and that's redirecting his energy. So you can redirect in speech, which is better. If they're talking ugly to you, try to redirect and de-escalate the fight. But if they're coming at you, don't just stand there and take that brunt force, because if he comes at me, he's stronger than me. Now I have to start fighting from the inside. And if I want to get to that door, he's in my way. But if he grabs that left, I come here, boom, and I'm heading to the door. I have my opening. So that's the redirection. For that, if he was to, let's say I don't have time to redirect to a side, then I would try to back up. Right now I have a chair behind me, so I'm just kind of messed up. Right here I'm just coming in, and I'm going to redirect him backwards that way. So now there's my opening again. A knee when I go by, so that he...
No cup.
But anyway, you just don't want to be right. Try not to be in front. But if you do, redirect, and find your opening, which the door would be my opening. And I was trapped here, but I used the wall.
You know, from observation of what Mrs. Key's doing, it doesn't take much for her to do what she's doing. It's like if she understands the fluid motion of a body and how it's working, she can use it to her advantage against my disadvantage, right?
And yes, sir.
Ms. Key, here's another thing. You know, you were training me, and I was making comment how a lot of things that you do is almost gun-related. I put it in a gun form, because you're talking about nonviolent dispute resolution, changing the way things are said to calm down the situation. So it's pretty cool. Ms. Key, you got less than a minute. Do what you want to say, but make sure you tell them how to get a hold of you.
All right, I'll just tell you how to get a hold of me. Right now I'm running a Christmas special, and it's $99 for 2 months of class. But you have to sign up before the end of the year. And I'm at 254-721-2775. And you guys be safe and be blessed.
Sounds good. Keep your powder dry. We'll see you next week, everybody.
I hear people talking bad about the way we have to live. Harping on wars, we fight and griping about the way things.
CBS News. I'm Bill Rakoff. Egypt's president is leading the memorials for those killed in yesterday's attack on a Sufi mosque in the Sinai Peninsula, but he's also going after those responsible for the massacre.
Egypt's president vowed to respond to the massacre with an iron fist, and within hours, jets were scrambled, launching airstrikes targeting the militants behind the worst terrorist attack in that country's recent history.
At CBS's Charlie Daggett, Egyptian President El-Sisi has ordered the construction of a mausoleum in memory of the 305 people killed in yesterday's attack. Police in Cleveland say the 12-year-old boy shot and killed outside his father's liquor